UK Wine Show, show number 82. Harper's Magazine with editor Richard Siddle. On this week's show.
And then next year, we've got a whole range of ideas in terms of the new award schemes. We're looking at doing on-trade roadshows aimed at sommeliers, bar staff, restaurant staff, which we're hoping to do in the summer.
In the news this week, King Valley gets its GI, Bride Valley Brew is on hold, and Australian and Californian crop size helps combat grape glut.
G'day! Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 82 for the 21st of December 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're talking with Harper's Magazine wine editor, Richard Siddle. We talked with Richard about the Harper's revamp and relaunch, and what changes they have in store for 2008. But before we get into that, we have the news with Jane Scott. Again, this week we're looking back at some of the news stories that made a splash in 2007 and giving an update.
Thanks, Chris. A new Australian Geographical Indication, or GI, will get the go-ahead after four court hearings and 10 years of wrangling. King Valley in Victoria first applied to become an official Australian wine zone a decade ago, but a group of growers from Whitland's High Plateau area within King Valley objected on the grounds they should be a region in their own right. After a series of appeals, the federal court upheld the decision for King Valley to include Whitland's High Plateau. The largest producer in the new GI is Brown Brothers, and the region produces a range of grapes, including Italian varieties Barbera, Dolcetto, Nebbiolo and Sangiovese. Meanwhile, a vineyard venture in Dorset by Stephen Spurrier and his wife Bella is on hold because too many people are trying to get in on the English Sparkling Wine Act. The Spurriers were hoping to team up with champagne house Duval Leroy to produce a fizz called Bride Valley Brew. But after examining the soil and climate of the farm they own, and with pressure on the price of English sparklers, as more and more vines are being planted, the risk was thought to be too great. They had planned for a first harvest in 2009, with the first cuvée ready in 2012 for the nearby Olympic sailing events. And finally this week, 2007 harvest levels in Australia and California have helped to combat the grape glut in parts of the New World. Australia's 2007 crop was the lowest yielding vintage for over a decade. The severe drought that was experienced across much of Australia helped bring production levels back into balance after excessive stock from the previous three record producing vintages. Water allocations to growers were restricted, causing yields to drop dramatically. Frosts and taint from bushfire smoke were also a factor. Meanwhile, California forecasts its grape crop to be up less than 1% from 2006 at 3.2 million tonnes, which again should help balance out the previous oversupply. That's it for the updates this week. Back over to you, Chris.
Cheers, Jane. I suppose the story about Stephen Spurrier is reasonably interesting, with them choosing not to go into wine. There's a lot of stories that get press coverage during the year, and not all of them come through. So it was quite interesting just to see what was going on there. I'm not too sure about there being a glut in 2012. There could, though, be. When we interviewed Dermot Sugru way back in show one or two, he was talking about there may being too much wine coming on stream in 2012. So it could be a good business decision by them. And don't forget our monthly poll. If you want to participate in our monthly poll, just go to ukwineshow.co.uk and click on the right-hand side. There's our poll there. This month's poll is: when you're purchasing a bottle of wine, which of the following is most important? Is it grape variety, country of origin, brand name or producer that you know and like, price, the wine has won an award, the wine is right for the occasion, or a recommendation? Do have your say, and again, it's ukwineshow.co.uk. Next up, we have the interview with Richard Siddle, editor of Harper's Wine and Spirit. Hi. I'm here with Richard Siddle. He's the editor of Harper's. How are you, Richard?
I'm fine, thank you. Very good.
Excellent. We're going to be talking about Harper's and some of the new changes that have come in this year. Before we get into that, do you want to tell us a wee bit about yourself, Richard? Are you a wine man from way back?
I'm a wine man in terms of drinking wine, but in terms of working, I'm very much a business journalist. I've edited a number of different business magazines. Spent 10 years retailing magazines, magazines like Checkout, Independent Retail News. So I'm very familiar with the kind of the grocery retail world. I used to write about everything from Mars bars to bottles of wine and spirits, but this is my first dedicated job in the wine world.
Have you ever done any wine qualifications, or is it just enthusiastic amateur experience?
Just very enthusiastic amateur experience.
I've seen a few bottles of wine in your house. We were recording this in your house, and there was a few bottles of wine on the bench.
Well, they did get some perks with this job, it has to be said, so that's okay.
How long has Harper's been going for?
Well, I've been in a magazine only for 6 months, but the magazine has been around since 1878, so nearly 130 years of experience. And it's quite scary in a way, taking the reins of a magazine that's got that much heritage. And there aren't that many magazines in the UK, never mind the world, that's got that long a history.
And we, in our news clips, we do a sort of a 10 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. And Sandra, our reporter, we sent her down to the WSET library.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She pulls out the old back issues of Harper's. And it was, I went down a few times and had a look at the old issues a long time ago. And it's quite interesting looking at how the magazine's actually changed over the last 100 years. And the current revamp is quite different to, quite different to the way it was sold or the way it was positioned maybe 100 years ago.
Yeah, well, actually, interestingly, the designers who helped us put together the new design did exactly that. They went into the archive. They took copies right back from day one. And actually, a lot of the fonts and the actual new logo for the magazine is actually quite, they actually took some of the ideas and iconography from that. So actually, the whole new look is a kind of a mixture between welcoming the new, but also celebrating the old. And actually, for those Harper's connoisseurs out there, they may actually recognise some of the kind of the fonts and stuff from way back. So,
talking about the revamp, when did it come in?
We relaunched the magazine and the website on May 18. I remember the day very well. This year, I mean, I was brought in March, so it's a pretty quick turnaround for myself. Only 8 weeks to put together the relaunch, but in terms of a planning process, that had been going on for about over a year with reader research, and we have an editorial steering group who advised on what we needed to try and do. But yeah, it came in May, and it's been quite a radical change. The whole magazine's, basically everything in the magazine's been turned upside down, inside out, and we completely opened up a website as well. So a website used to be subscription only, it's now free access, and we have a daily rolling news service on the website. So it's been a complete top to tail. I think someone described it as almost like a reinvention of Harper's, and I think that's quite a nice way of looking at it.
What was the main focus of the revamp? Because you've changed it around, you've included sort of almost like bite-sized chunks of content.
Yeah, I mean, essentially the way I looked at it was, I looked at it from obviously looking at all the research that was out there. It was really trying to reconnect Harper's with the kind of the changing world of wine and spirits. And I think as the wine world tries to make sure it's part of the modern day society, I think Harper's needed to do that as well. I think that there's a slight, with the old Harper's, are perhaps being a little bit inward and being very much about the kind of the wine making and the process. And we wanted to try and introduce, whilst keeping that still, introduce a little bit more elements about the business side and the actual sort of process of how the whole structure works, and the end game being how much wine, how many spirits are sold through off licenses, through restaurants. So we look very much at trying to connect with every single part of the supply chain. So we've introduced certain sections of the magazine where we like to think that if you're a winemaker in Hunter Valley, or if you're a distiller in the Orkneys, or if you're a PR, if you're a marketing, if you're wherever you are in the wine spirits world, sections like the week, where you've got big week four, picks of the week, you know, good week, bad week, all the kind of things that we're very familiar with reading in the national press, we kind of felt it was nice to have a kind of a community sense and try and bring everyone together in those sort of sections. So, you know, statistics and top tens and all the kind of things that are nice, light, touchy-feely information. But then also, you know, having the big, deep, insightful features as well. So combining the two, and I think trying to make Harper's the kind of magazine that you might pick up 2-3 times in a week. So you might read it, A, for the news initially. You know, you might like look at, and then you might like take the top tens and the picks of the week for another time. And then when you're looking for a more of a meaty read, you might look at sort of the 4-page report on, you know, the latest harvest in Bordeaux or whatever. So it's a kind of like a magazine that's like, to suit people at different times of their day and of their reading needs.
Like you used to do supplements, you know, supplement on Alsace or New Zealand. Do you still do that? Because they seem to be almost buried within the main magazine sometimes now. What's going on there? Because I used to love the supplements because I could read the mag, biff it once I finished that week, and keep the supplement for if I needed to keep it for research.
Yeah, no, I mean, we still do supplements. I mean, I think, in a way, if I could take that as a compliment, then wait, because I think sometimes what we are now doing is, in the features in the magazine, we might now be doing, say, a 6-7-page report on New Zealand. So they're almost like mini supplements within the magazine. We're just giving over more space to exploring features. But no, I mean, we are still very much dedicated to doing regular supplements. This year we've done California, we've done Argentina, we've done a supplement on Champagne. We're literally, as we speak, doing for the first time a dedicated one looking specifically at the entrees, looking at all the suppliers and the services available for people in the entrees. We've got supplements coming out in December on the closure debate. So no, I mean, it's very much about partnerships with the trade. And yes, the supplement side of things is where we have an opportunity to really drill down and give people that kind of like longevity of information. So yes, we're still very dedicated to doing supplements.
Who buys your magazine? Where is it purchased?
Well, we're actually a subscription magazine, so you can't buy it in WH Smith. You know, there are people who say, why not? And I like to think actually the new look actually would sit alongside any magazine on the newsstand. But we are subscription only. So essentially, we go to anybody who's involved in the kind of the grape to the glass, is kind of like how we describe it. And anybody who's willing to pay their annual subscription. But as I say, we go from winemakers, we go through to wine merchants, sommeliers, bar managers, wholesale agencies, everybody in the middle. But yeah, and we are very proud of the fact that every person who picks up a copy of Harper's or has a copy of Harper's has actually paid to get it. You know, lots of other trade magazines are controlled circulation, whereby essentially they get a free copy, whether you like it or not. You get sent a copy. Whereas if you have a copy of Harper's, then it's actually you made a chosen to, and you've also actually paid for it.
It's not cheap either. I think it's what £180 and
in, all the details are in our flannel panel. But yeah, I mean, obviously for international, it's a little bit higher because of the postage and printing. We like to think it's the priced at the right level, and the price hasn't necessarily gone up a great deal in the last 2-3 years. But one interesting thing is our website coverage is, you know, we have now made that open, completely free access. And the reason for that really is that, you know, I think content on website these days, people are a lot less willing, obviously, to pay for content online. And we also felt that by completely reinvigorating and relaunching our websites with fresh content, everything on the websites that you see is fresh, new content. It's not from the magazine. It's opening Harper's up to a whole new audience in the UK and around the world. And the kind of the hope is that people might see the stuff we're doing online and think, well, actually, I ought to really get myself a magazine subscription as well.
How many staff have you got?
We are the famous five. There's myself. There's a deputy editor, James O'Fanast. We have a news editor, Shirley Webb. We have a staff writer, Rebecca Gibb, who, up until this week, actually, was the Young Wine Writer of the Year. I think they've just named the new Young Wine Writer of the Year. And we have our designer, Sasha Farman. So we're a small, tight team, and we're literally just bringing in a new web editor who starts in a couple of weeks' time. So tight, small team, lots to do.
But you're owned by a bigger company, so you must get resourcing from that.
Yeah, I mean, we are part of Nexus Media, who's our publishing company. So, yeah, we do have, you know, support from IT and marketing, and our sales team, can't forget them. But in terms of actually nitty gritty getting the stories written and laid out, it's down to the five of us. And obviously we use lots of freelancers in the wine world. So if anyone's listening and has got a good idea for a wine feature, or, you know, please send through your ideas. We're always looking for new bright stars to write for Harper's.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you're going to get inundated now, but that's great, Richard. 2007 was a big year with your revamp of everything, both your online presence and your magazine. What have you got planned for 2008?
Yeah, I mean, we really sort of see this as sort of phase one, phase two. I mean, phase one was really about, you know, reinventing Harper's as a brand, as a magazine, totally revolutionising the kind of the websites and doing that. Phase two is all about really kind of drilling down into content and what people really want. We're going to be doing a lot more research about how the magazine and the website's performing. And then next year, we've got a whole range of ideas in terms of the new award schemes. We're looking at doing a on-trade roadshow, series of sort of educational support roadshows around the country aimed at sommeliers, bar staff, restaurant staff, which we're hoping to do in the summer. A lot more kind of round tables, a lot more kind of conferences we're looking at. So yeah, we see 2008 as being the kind of the year when Harper's actually starts getting out and really kind of like, you know, taking the brand out on to the country in a way, in terms of being conferences and round tables and that kind of thing.
You've mentioned a couple of times about new supplements for the on-trade, talk about doing some conferences or on-trade shows. Are you really starting to shift your focus into the on-trade? Because I've always thought of Harper's more as an off-trade type magazine as opposed to the bars and restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, part of the relaunch, we actually extended our circulation from 2,500 to 5,000. We kind of like did some deliberate targeted subscription drive, and we've now picked up a lot of people now from the on-trade, and we see that as sort of squaring the circle, if you see what I mean, in terms of we are now talking to people in the on-trade, we're talking to people in the off-trade, and you know, so sommeliers and at all the top restaurants, bar managers, restaurant owners, restaurant designers, you know, we're very much interested in the whole of the kind of the on-trade trends and how that then dovetails with the off-trade. Because clearly a lot of the middlemen, as it were, the suppliers and the agencies are supporting both. So it kind of makes sense for Harper's to be doing that as well. And it's, to be honest, it's also great fun because you now get a chance and excuses to go and see some of the best restaurants around. So key thing to get across really is that, yes, we are a trade magazine, a business magazine, but we'd like to think, you know, with the new look and the way we're kind of presenting the wine and spirit world now is, you know, if you're a wine enthusiasts like myself, a spirits enthusiast, you may have a decanter subscription, you know, welcome people to take a look at Harper's, and you think there's a lots of information in there that you know, for consumers and trade alike, but ultimately we are all either wine or spirit drinkers, so every view is perfect. And also a website is it's free access, and I'd encourage anyone to go to our site, harpers.co.uk.
Excellent, Richard. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much.
Great, thank you. Cheers.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Richard. Richard may have been only at the helm for 6 months, but the changes that have gone ahead have been significant under his watch. If you don't subscribe to Harper's, do have a look at their website. Next week, we're going to be talking with Blair and Estelle Hunt from Bald Hills Winery in Otago, New Zealand. I'm currently on holiday in New Zealand and Australia, and I recorded the show last week, so it's pretty fresh in the can, so to speak. We're going to be talking to them about how they've done really well in the competitions this year, picking up 7 trophies, including the IWC Regional Trophy for Bald Hills Pinot Noir 2005, as well as the International Pinot Noir Trophy. And then in September, in the awards ceremony in London, they went on to win the ultimate accolade, 2007 Champion Red Wine. And the week prior, Bald Hills Pinot Noir 2005 also claimed the regional and international Pinot Noir over 10-pound trophy at the Decanter Wine Awards 2007, and it was the first time a non-Burgundian wine has picked up the award. All this wine success hasn't come at the expense of the environment, and they also picked up the inaugural IWC Planet Earth Award for Sustainability. I met with Blair and Estelle at their vineyards and home last week, and if you ever thought about owning a boutique winery, I think these guys have got it absolutely nailed. So, until next week, cheers. And have a Merry Christmas.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.